natural nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and we love that you join us every week right here on Progressive Radio Network. We have been doing this show since Gary Knoll started Progressive Radio Network, and for 20 years before that, we have many other radio shows that are now, I guess, called podcasts. We actually do them in real radio stations. And then they're also available both as a podcast while we're doing the show and also archived. So if you miss something, you always can go ahead and come back in. We have so many classes and workshops going on right now, including pretty much every day and every week. Many are online and many are in person. And to find them, I would suggest just visit naturalnurse.com. You can join the mailing list by just going to the bottom of the page at naturalnurse.com. Just put in your email. No other identifying information is asked for, and you can, you know, say no more at any time. Or you can just visit the site yourself at naturalnurse.com and go to classes and events. Or you can visit media for links to all of our radio shows, hundreds of them, as well as free articles and services. So if you go to classes at naturalnurse.com, you will find that this weekend is coming up in person and also available online if you would like to attend virtually, which is the annual Florida Herbal Conference, which is really one of the best conferences for learning about natural medicine. It's live in Lake Wales, Florida, this weekend, and you can join us in person or just go to the link at naturalnurse.com, and you'll see a lot of us there, the teachers that teach both about herbal medicine and a lot about wildcrafting. We were out in the field gathering plants. And also we have a special code if you sign up for the conference, either virtually or in person. If you use the code NATURALNURSE, you get, you know, a substantial discount, which is nice. And then we also have this very same time coming up, the Echo Tours for Cures to Jamaica, the education vacation in the island of Jamaica. And here's where we take a whole gang of people, whoever would like to come. We have all kinds of teachers. And this, you stay in these very nice cabins. You know, it's not the Ritz-Carlton. This is like country style, but very nice. And the food is excellent. And a lot of meals are included, as well as all your tours and education. We have guest lecturers there. So that's going on as well. And you can visit naturalnurse.com and just go to classes. And then there's a link to find out all about Echo Tours for Cures, where we go to the island of Jamaica, the north coast, which is called the Maroon Country. And that's always a fabulous event. And you can just find out more if it's too late for you to schedule to come this year. You can get on the mailing list because we have this, I think this is the 30th year that we are doing it. Yes, it was interrupted during the COVID days, but now we're back on. We also have the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course going on. And that is going on right now. And you can join anytime. We had class one already, but you can join in anytime. And you can get a lot of credits for that as well. You can get 18 CEUs if you're a professional. And that would be a nurse, a registered dietitian, a licensed massage therapist, an acupuncturist. So anyone with a license can get 18 CEUs for learning about herbal medicine. But if you're not someone with a license, you can take the course and you still get 18 CEUs and you get a certificate of having completed the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course. So all that is really great. And we'd love to see you. So just come on board and go to naturalnurse.com and then you can join in. Today, we have a wonderful guest and her name is Dr. Kulreet Chaudhary. And she combines expertise in both modern neurology and the ancient science of Ayurveda, which has uniquely positions her as an expert able to pull from a broad base to treat her clients and to share her information. She is also the author of several books, including The Prime and Sound Medicine. So we are so happy to have her here today to share with us. Welcome, Dr. Chaudhry, for the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thanks, guys. And it's such a pleasure to be back. Ellen, I've got to tell you, I love what you're doing, taking people to Jamaica. I do something similar, taking people to India, and it's such an exceptional experience. I'm so happy to hear that you do this.
Yeah, this is our 30th year.
It's amazing.
So that trip, we've been together, my partner and myself, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, who's a naturopathic physician, and we've written many books together, which you can also find at naturalnurse.com books. So it is very exciting because a lot of the people who are our teachers there are the mm-hmm. bush doctors.
Yes.
Who are the indigenous people who live there a very long time, centuries. In particular, the maroon culture started during the British slave trade. And what happened was there was a woman named Nanny of the Maroons. Mm-hmm. And during the transit from Africa, and then they wound up landing in Jamaica, they didn't know where they were going to be landing, of course. She armed herself by taping to her body seeds of plants that they were using in Africa since she was the town herbalist. So mm-hmm. she wrapped them in her body when she realized she was being stolen as a slave. And then she was an organizer, and she organized a mutiny amongst the slaves during their journey and said, wherever we land, let's just run for it. And of course, many of them got killed by being shot in the back by the British. But we have to remember that loading rifles at that time, you know, took a long time. So many of them escaped, and they ran up to the north coast of Jamaica and created a culture there called the Maroons, where they still are. So it certainly is a fascinating journey. So let's go back in time to what made you interested in Ayurveda.
Well, I didn't know it when I was younger, but my family was, you know, practicing it. And the reason why I didn't know it when I was younger is because it was just reflected in the way that we live. And that's really Ayurvedic medicine. It was the original lifestyle medicine, and it just acknowledged that, you know, food is medicine and that your habits will dictate your health, that it's not that you're born with some gene that gets activated and you're destined to be sick, or that at a certain age, you know, everybody becomes diabetic or everybody becomes demented. It wasn't that at all. It was very much that your health is under your control, and that this connection to nature and to food is critical, you know, for our health, that the ecosystem externally determines the ecosystem internally. And so I didn't really know that we were practicing Ayurveda. I just knew that, you know, I meditated, I did yoga. My food was cooked with an array of spices that are, you know, now sold in pill form as herbal supplements. And when I got sick, you know, we were taking a combination of turmeric and honey. We weren't taking antibiotics. And I think, like most things, when you grow up with them, I took it for granted. And when I went into medical school, of course, you know, I'm learning about all of this reductionist view of the human body, which I thought was just absolutely amazing. It just seemed, you know, so advanced compared to this village way of living. And so I very much got lured into, you know, just memorizing all the fancy words in medical school and getting excited about all of the technology. And then I forgot about this way that had kept me healthy for so long, really kept me healthy without me even thinking about it. And then it wasn't until I became a neurologist, it was actually my first year of practicing neurology, and I got hit with intractable migraine headaches. I mean, I really didn't appreciate just how debilitating migraine headaches were until I developed them. And that was when I explored, you know, everything that I had learned as a trained neurologist. Nothing worked, or the side effects were worse than the headaches. And I finally had to go back to my roots. And I literally went back to my mom and just said, what was that stuff that we were doing when I was growing up? Like, what was, you know, where do I find somebody who practices that? Because this is the sickest I've ever been. And so it was my own development of migraine headaches and my inability to treat them as a neurologist that really, it brought me back the humility and reconnected me, you know, to that tradition. And so, of course, as soon as I saw the Ayurvedic practitioner, he said everything was coming from the gut, which I didn't understand at all at that time. And within 3 months, my headaches were gone, no medications. You know, we worked on taking some herbs for healing the gut. I changed my diet. I went back to my meditation routine more regularly. And I was clearer than I had been for, you know, nearly a decade now. And I had lost 10 pounds that I didn't even know I had gained. And so it was just a complete reset for me. And that's what really brought me back to this ancient tradition. You know, thank God I developed migraine headaches.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sometimes those challenges can be our best teachers. Mm-hmm. And so many physicians who I have worked with who more or less practice at this point more natural techniques, they were forced into it because of a challenge either personally or with their own personal family.
Yes. And I mean, for good reason. I think it's hard when you train this long in a system, especially in a system that's so demanding in terms of obedience, right, to the information and to the subjects that you're learning. It's tremendous obedience because you just have to memorize so much, so you don't even have time to question it. But you know, when you're so embedded in a field like that, it's not easy to break away. Something has to force you out.
Yeah, it's too bad because I'm afraid that having been a nurse now since 1973, I have seen a massive movement to sort of this industrial complex of medicine that's in place right now. I don't see that it can really stand because when every doctor is not happy being a doctor and they feel like, what are they doing in their daily life? What they're doing is standing in back of a computer, looking at a patient across the room. They don't touch them. They don't smell them. They're not really interacting with them. And what they're looking for is a code for the correct billing. Yes. And whatever someone has, they just get some prescription. Even if one person is a 90-year-old woman and the next patient is a 56-year-old, 250-pound man, if they both say they have pain, they get the same prescription. That is total madness.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And you're right, it's not sustainable because it's not producing any health. And I think people don't realize that you don't go into the field of medicine to see people get worse. And so if you can't, in India, we say, if you're not fulfilling your dharma, if you're not filling your life purpose, life doesn't feel joyful. It doesn't feel fulfilling. And I think that's the majority of physicians are experiencing that because they're not able to fulfill their dharma. Our dharma, our responsibility as physicians is to help people heal.
That's so true. Very well, very, very well put. And I'd like to remind our listeners that you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And our guest today is Dr. Kulreet Chaudhary, and she has done a lot of work both in conventional medicine, in terms of being part of the director of Wellspring Health at Scripps Memorial Hospital, and that's for 10 years, and yet is also a pioneer in the field of integrative medicine. And they also, you know, saying integrative is a great word because we certainly do not want to throw out drugs and surgery.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the beauty of it is that, you know, we are at a certain point right now in history and medicine. And so having this background of both, it's not like you meet somebody who's on all the medications, you just go, oh, we're just going to take you off of everything. Or if somebody has like an acute surgical issue, you know, it's not like you go, hey, you know, I think in a few months, we'll be able to get rid of this. You take people where they're at, you work with them, and you create that bridge. And sometimes you know, people do have to stay on a medication, but it's not this list of like 8 to 10 medications that are unnecessary if you implement lifestyle changes. So I love having both backgrounds, and I really love that I can order an MRI, you know, I can order an ultrasound, and I'm given this information. I love that. But what I do with that information in terms of being able to prevent a chronic condition is really limited if I practice just, you know, allopathic medicine, because if, especially as a neurologist, since almost everything I treat gets worse, if I was practicing just allopathic medicine, I would just slowly watch my patients decline. And instead, I've got this arsenal where, you know, I can use a technology, but I'm also talking to patients about how to change this. And if we hit a point where, okay, they cannot get off of one medication, we've reduced the dose as much as possible, and they're not having side effects, that's fantastic. You know, they're at a place where they've got a good quality of life.
And that's why that term integrative is excellent. Another word is functional medicine. They're referring to things that you're talking about rather than alternative medicine, because it's not really an alternative. It's just what you said, Dr. Chaudhary, which is using everything that works to create comfort and health as much as possible, and just slam dunking one pharmaceutical after another does not lead to healing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also really, as you mentioned before, it's really deteriorating the relationship between the physician and the patient. One of my teachers in Ayurveda had said that so much of healing, no matter what you're practicing, whether you're an allopathic doctor or you're an integrative doctor, it doesn't matter. So much of the healing actually occurs by the intention and the compassion from the physician aimed at the patient. And so that relationship of patient and physician is part of the healing. And if you don't have an opportunity to create a relationship with your patient, you're not giving them the most important thing. It's independent of no matter what you're prescribing. It's just having somebody know that you actually care. That in and of itself, and we've done studies in multiple sclerosis, where just having a therapeutic relationship with your patient actually changed the disease course. And that's the beauty of, you know, integrative or functional medicine, is you have to know your patient. You have to know their story. And once you know somebody's story, once you know how they actually got somewhere, it's nearly impossible not to feel compassion and empathy for them. So the healing's built in when you start practicing these systems, because you have to know their narrative.
That's very, very well put. And I'd like to remind our listeners that a good place to find you is that Dr. Chaudhary. And you have your books there. You have two beautiful books. One is called Prime and one is called Sound Medicine. So when you're talking about sound medicine, are you talking about like the therapeutic use of music and other sounds?
Yeah. So it has that, you know, double intention of saying that sound medicine is musical, but also that it is a legitimate form of medicine. And just like you, I have very strong connections to South India, both the Ayurvedic and Siddha medicine tradition. And so I go back there every year. And just like you had your mentors in Jamaica, I have my mentors that have come from lineages that have extended literally thousands of years, and I continue to learn from them. And you know, as you were saying, going out and getting the wild herbs, like just picking up the herbs, and then we go in and we start preparing and we do the same thing. And so one of the things that I dove into when I was living there for a few years was the way in which that sound was actually used to heal. And it wasn't even that it was, you know, some therapy, and I'll use your term, it wasn't an alternative therapy. Sound was a part of every step of healing. And so we were talking about, you know, cultivating herbs. Sound was used when the seeds were planted in the ground. Sound was used as they were growing. Sound was used when they were harvested. And sound was used when they were prepared. And then when the patient took the herbs, again, sound was used. The patient would actually recite certain sounds. So sound was an inseparable part of medicine. And so when I was there looking at the ancient Siddha records, I was diving into, you know, why that was. Like, why was this so critical? Why was this so important to the point where they said that if you're not using sound, your herbs will, the supplements and stuff that they were making, the herbs they were making, they would never be fully potent. Why was this so important? And as I looked out at different traditions, this was knowledge across all the ancient traditions, all the ancient spiritual lineages. And why are we not using it at all? Why is it something that is almost completely absent, except in the form of silent sound waves? So in like ultrasound, you know, and other therapies that are using extracorporeal sound waves. But why aren't we using it as a therapeutic tool that patients can actually implement themselves on a daily basis to heal the body? And so the book was exploring the science, both from the West, both in terms of quantum physics, because you have to get into quantum physics and the more recent theory about the human biofield. You have to get into that to explain the ancient sciences.
That's true. It's beautiful how so many of these ancient scientific procedures and beliefs, really, when we delve into them and do research, rather than disproving them, we prove them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so nice because we're entering an age where our science is starting to catch up to a point that we can start to explain why these are valid, you know, methods. If you don't have a science, you can't have a technology. And most people don't understand that. You know, they think everything we're doing must be the latest and the greatest. And I said, well, no, because we've actually lost a lot of science over the years for many, many different reasons. We have lost certain scientific principles, especially principles around vibrational medicine. So sound, light, and so forth. And we're starting to get a little bit of that, like, you know, even with like eye surgery done with lasers, all of that is actually vibrational medicine. You're using light in order to treat a condition. But we're just starting to get into the science of that. And without a science, you can't produce the technologies. It's like your mind, if it doesn't have the concepts, it can't produce the tools. And so that's a big kind of concept for people to understand, that technology is birthed out of new concepts. It's not like technology just exists. You know, medical technology isn't finite. The more we expand our understanding of the science of life, the more the new technologies emerge.
That is so beautifully put and also so true. And people can find out really wonderful details. And this book is written so that anyone can understand and implement a lot of the things that Dr. Chaudhary is describing here in her book, Sound Medicine, How to Use the Ancient Science of Sound to Heal the Body and Mind. And what a difference that is to what we see, unfortunately, in mainstream, let's think about in mainstream hospital. People are trying to heal, and what kind of sounds are there? Yeah. You know, just like beeping that drives you absolutely nuts.
That's so true.
It's just the opposite of healing. It's amazing how out of touch, you know, that entire thing has become. And it's interesting because there is now an NIH group, which I actually was invited to participate in, and it's called Whole Person Health. And it actually brought together hundreds of qualified health providers from all over the world. It was this wonderful group. And what they were talking about is there's no reason to wait, that the science is there, that natural therapeutics such as botanical medicine and sound healing and so many other things, and we'll talk about more when we come back from the break, have enough evidence, and particularly because of a much, much better adverse effect profile ratio, as well as a much better outcome and lower cost, it should be what is standard of practice across the board. And this is from the NIH. So it's really exciting that we're even getting to that point of understanding.
That is exciting.
And then, of course, implementing it, you know, that has to do with political things and
yes,
for company profits and stuff
like that. Of
course,
that's a challenge is the system that's now in place, because it's not a lack of science. It's just a system. Everything is like, okay, now how do you code that?
Right? Exactly.
Can you imagine that? It's just a set of numbers that is keeping us all from living in a healthy, happy society. It's just a set of numbers.
Well, that's a great way to put it. And we will talk about it more when we get back. And right now we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with physician and neurologist Dr. Kulrit Chaudhary. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen, or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
Well, I imagine they may have played the music, so we'll come back in. And thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We invite you to go to naturalnurse.com, or you could go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or Instagram. We have all those things as well. But I really put most of the information right on Facebook, right on the website at naturalnurse.com, because I notice on Facebook, which it's all there too, but things move this way. At naturalnurse.com, you can always find something right where you found it last time, and you can use the link to get to Facebook, Instagram, etc., if you prefer those venues. Today we have as our guest, and I will say, the brilliant and renowned Dr. Kulrit Chaudhary. Dr. Chaudhary, what is the best place for people to find you?
So I have my personal website, as we mentioned, drkulreetchaudhary.com, but I also have a website where I put a lot of my articles and so forth with healthy directions, and that's just drkchaudhary.com. Both of those are great sites, and my website kind of gives you more updates about what I'm doing right now, and the Healthy Directions website gives you more of my resource library for topics in Ayurveda.
Well, what I will share with listeners is that you can listen to the archive of this show. Like if you're listening today live, then we will have it posted, and we always have links. And that's a very easy way to find more information from many of our, you know, probably thousands of guests by this time, because we've been doing radio since 1987. And this particular show, I believe, is on since 1990 or something like that, whenever Progressive Radio Network started. So we've been doing this a very, very long time to share information with our listeners. Now, Dr. Kulreet, a big thing that I know you're very knowledgeable about is the sort of microbiome and gut-brain connection. Yes. A lot of people are surprised by that, but it is so well documented.
And it's just like everything else. It, you know, when you think you've arrived upon something that's new, like I did when I was writing Sound Medicine, I look back and there's so much research on it. And for me as a neurologist, the dive into the gut-brain connection, of course, started with my own journey. You know, why did improving my gut get rid of my migraines immediately? That rocked my world as a neurologist. I mean, I had no basis for understanding that. You know, after almost a decade worth of education, I could not explain why my own headaches went away. And when I started to train in Ayurvedic medicine, I was just really shocked at, you know, how important the gut is to every system, but from a functional standpoint, how much the gut and the brain function as one. And this really took me aback. I had to like stand back and digest this for a while, because we tend to think, or at least I did, I guess this is a bias as a neurologist, that the brain is somehow in charge, that it's somehow independent. Like it's such a complex and sophisticated organ. And because it's so tied to our personality and to our thoughts, which, you know, we tend to identify ourselves through that whole neurochemical process, that surely it was the control center, you know, that it was dictating what was going on in the body. And it was very, very challenging at first to make the transition to understanding how much the gut actually influenced the brain, influenced the way that we think, influenced personality, and that in turn, those signals that went from the gut to the brain would eventually then influence every single organ in the body. That was just, you know, pun intended here, but it was mind-blowing to me that that was possible. And honestly, Ellen, at first I resented it. You know, as a neurologist, I was like, but this is the supreme organ. But then when I got into it, I was like, wait a minute. I'm dealing with patients all day, every day that have neurodegenerative conditions that only get worse. And now I'm realizing the connection between the brain and the gut. Hold on here. We could actually start changing the course of these illnesses through this channel. And so I dove into it and I saw what we would consider miraculous only because we don't have the science for it. And if you don't have the science for something in modern medicine, then you consider it a miracle, right? Because it's outside of the laws of nature as we understand them. But I saw what I would consider, you know, miraculous cures, which of course they're not miraculous. They were shifts in the microbiome that resulted in shifts in brain health. Again and again and again as a neurologist, just by addressing this gut-brain connection. And so I realized that as a neurologist, if I wasn't paying attention to the gut, I just simply wasn't doing my job.
But wait, let's just say that it's not common knowledge. So it should be because the science is there.
And that's what surprised me when I was writing the Prime, because the Prime was actually based on the program I came up with for my patients, the kind of foundational program for brain health, which was all, you know, acknowledging the connection between the brain and the gut, what I was surprised is there was so much science there. And of course, way more now than when I had written the book. And, you know, the frustrating thing, and I know you've spent, you know, nearly a lifetime with this frustration too, is that the science is there, and yet it's not being taught in medical schools, and that we're stuck in this paradigm of only learning about drugs and drug side effects and their mechanisms of action. And we're not actually learning about how a healthy body works. And it's not just going into ancient traditions, although they really nailed it. I mean, they understood this connection to such a fine degree of detail. But we don't even have to go that far. We can go just within the last few decades of our own medical legacy in research, our own medical research legacy, and it's there, but it's not being taught. And if it's not being taught, it's not being practiced.
Yeah, and I'm afraid that that's where we get to the politics, because who stands to lose? Not patients, they stand to win. Of course, one thing in terms of patients is that all of these therapeutics that you're talking about are really not about you as a highly qualified, trained, and licensed physician doing something to someone. It's you acting as a teacher.
Yes.
But the patient is the one who has to take action. And I think the entire setup is kind of like, doctor, heal me. You do it, doctor. Give me that one pill that makes it all go away, which doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist at all.
You know, you act as a teacher, but the individual has to make the dietary, the lifestyle changes that, you know, cause the healing to occur.
And Ellen, you know what's amazing though? Because I've heard this from doctors who don't practice in an integrative way. And I understand their bias, because it is really hard to motivate patients even to take their medications. And I said, yeah, but their medications oftentimes make them feel miserable, and you're not really seeing that huge of a benefit. I said, you couple a compassionate physician armed with this knowledge on how to change their life. It's not just changing their body. It's changing their body, their mind, their relationships. Because once you become healthy, everything in your life becomes healthy. You know, it's not limited to just a physical symptom. It overflows into your relationships. It overflows into how you're doing at work. Everything becomes better. That when you couple that physician whom they trust so much with the compassion and the knowledge, I see so much compliance in my patients. You know, that has really not been an issue. So it's this myth that people don't want to change. People don't know how, they don't have the partnership. And creating that kind of partnership, you don't do that in 10 minutes. You know, my consultations with my patients, they're an hour long, because that's how long it takes to educate. But many of my patients, I only have as patients for 1 to 2 years, because I teach them how to fish and then they go off and they do it themselves. You know, they really learn how to use their kitchen as a pharmacy. They learn about their body. They learn about their tendencies, and they're able to do it on their own.
And then the good part is you're still able to use, you know, conventional testing, and also more advanced testing. Like, we'll do something like Genova Labs, where you can actually look inside the Krebs cycle and see why someone is having particular symptoms, because they're low in, let's say, malic acid. And so the nerve impulses don't get transferred. Now, that's really interesting, to couple that with the natural therapeutics.
Absolutely. And that is what brings the joy back into practicing medicine. And, you know, this is a topic that people are starting to discuss more, but not enough, that, as you said, most physicians are really unhappy being physicians. It's not fulfilling anymore, because you're not seeing people get better. And so when you start coupling, you know, the science that we're learning today with just the science of life, how do human beings stay healthy? It's so fulfilling to be a physician. I've been happier and happier each year of practicing medicine.
Yeah, when you see people get well, it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
We had so many thousands of patients, actually, in 23 years that I was the head nurse at a holistic medical center run by Dr. Serafina Corsello. and it was just fabulous. We had 50 practitioners, a very big practice. But one challenge is that it was individualized medicine, like you said, that we spent at least an hour per visit per person, and we had a full team dealing with the psychological.
Yes.
We actually had cooking classes there. We had yoga classes. They could go to ours or go to some other one. You know, so many therapeutics to deal with. Dr. Corsella was originally a psychiatrist, so she was very into the mind connection as well as the nutrition connection. So all of that together, we saw people get well. And one doctor came in very annoyed with his hands crossed, clasped across his chest about a patient who was going to get a kidney transplant, who was told that her kidneys would never be okay. And they became totally well. Not immediately, it took 2 years, but he came in very annoyed and looked around and said, well, none of this stuff has been proven. And she just got better because you guys give them so much attention.
Well, and okay, even if we said that,
right,
you guys give them so much attention. Okay, then let's attend to our patients more.
Yeah, that's what Dr. Corsella said. She said, oh, okay, so we love them into being well. She said, good, if that's what it is.
And that's the heart of every ancient system. It was really, yes, we understand the science of life, but at the basis of every medicine that works is love, because love is literally who we are. It's not something we experience. It's just simply who we are. And so if healers don't know how to connect to that, then we will never help anyone. You know, Ellen, it's interesting that you said that she was a psychologist, because my work is the same. I know so much psychology now. I have done so much research and read so much, because I found the same thing that, you know, I always address the gut-brain connection first. That's always like step one, that until we have that, nothing can move forward. But once we establish that, the next step that I take my patients through is healing trauma. And you have to have a healthy gut-brain connection in order to really do that work, because it requires so much processing. And when that processing comes up, both the brain and the gut, you know, have to really, really go to work. But when you finally remove the unprocessed trauma in people's lives, and the gut is healthy and the brain has a support, then healing just becomes spontaneous. That's really when I kind of just step back. And that's why, you know, my patients, for the most part, I see them for a few years. Once I get them to that point, they just go back to their natural set point.
Yeah, it's so fulfilling. Now, you threw out the word microbiome. And what's really amazing to me is when we talk about the consciousness connection between the microorganisms that make up the microbiome in an individual, which we can change if needed, because there are biofilm groups that release a lot of negative toxic, both information and chemicals. And there are those that have a positive relationship with us in our body. That is really phenomenal.
And the fact that they help us think in a certain way, that's what took me a while to really process, that when I have certain organisms flourishing in my gut, my brain starts to think in a way that helps me flourish in life. To me, that was absolutely amazing. And of course, the reverse is true too, that when your brain is functioning better, it invites those good guys to populate your gut. And there was a study, it was a small study, but it was still a significant study, looking at Tibetan monks and comparing them to some of the people in the surrounding villages, and seeing that the Tibetan monks that were meditating on a regular basis, they were populated with certain strains of bacteria that were associated with lower levels of anxiety and depression. So and that's what I keep saying, is it's the brain and the gut, it's one functional unit. And when you know that it's one functional unit, and this is why I start off with certain herbs, you know, certain things that people prepare in the kitchen to help strengthen this one functional unit, that when you strengthen that, everything else starts to become possible.
Well, we're going to take another little break right here, and we will continue our discussion, and we'll definitely go into some of those herbs that you talk about, which are great ones for, you know, many people to get started on after they change their diet and start looking at what's going on with their mental health and with their focus and their emotional wellness. All of these are linked to any kind of health imbalance that you might be experiencing. So we are going to come a little break so people can hear about a wonderful station here, which is Progressive Radio Network. You can always hear us at prn.live or go to naturalnurse.com under media. And we have links to literally, I don't know, maybe 1,000 of our shows that you can hear replays of if you'd so desire. And they're also searchable in terms of content and topic. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. At The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network at prn.live. And you can always find us at naturalnurse.com. We also love to get your comments. Just email us. You can directly email us from naturalnurse.com. You can sign up for the newsletter. You could investigate classes and workshops, have thousands of articles that are free, and also all of these, whatever you want to call them, radio shows or podcasts that we've been doing, two or three a week since 1987, and they're all there for your listening pleasure. We have many wonderful guests, including our fabulous guest today, Dr. Kulreet Chaudhary, and you can find her at Healthy Directions, or you can find her under Dr. K. Why did you choose to associate with Healthy Directions?
Well, you know, a lot of my life in the past decade, how do I put it? There's kind of been a very strong path set forward. So I kind of wake up to the direction it's going to go. And so I was actually living in India, doing this research with the Siddha records and going kind of deeper and deeper into these ancient sciences. And I came back to the U.S. just simply to my book tour for my second book, Sound Medicine. And a few days after I arrived here, the pandemic hit and I couldn't get back to India. So I was literally stranded back in the U.S. for 9 months. My husband and son were still in India. And I think, you know, just like how I got migraine headaches, my life tends to kind of have these sharp turns when it's time to take the next step. So I was getting deeper and deeper into the medicine of thousands and thousands of years ago and loving it. But the gap kind of between these two worlds, right, was getting wider and wider. And so I was back in the U.S. and Healthy Directions just happened to come to me and said, look, we're really interested in starting an Ayurvedic line, promoting this knowledge. And we think that you would be a great brand ambassador for this. And so I laid out kind of all of my requests. Like I wanted us to talk about many of the ancient sciences like mantra and yantra. And I wanted it to be wisdom based. You know, I just put all of these things out and I wanted an East-West approach, like, you know, incorporating with the Ayurvedic supplements, the herbs, some of the nutraceuticals that we're so deficient in that are becoming necessary just for the body to be able to utilize the supplements. So I put all of that out there and I was like, you know, I want to connect it to these ancient traditions in the most sacred of ways. And they said yes to everything. And when I reached out to my team, you know, in India, it was just really clear that, okay, so this is now the next chapter. So they gave me essentially a platform to be able to share with the world, whoever is interested, you know, in share these ancient techniques that nobody on the planet knows about. So it was just kind of, you know, serendipity. It just everything kind of came together. And it was just the right way for me to continue to go back to India, which I do every year, continue to go deeper into that knowledge, but bring it back here to the U.S. so that the bridge is formed in a meaningful way so that the knowledge will continue to be passed on.
Well, that is truly wonderful. And let's talk a little bit about some really special herbs that I know you talk about all the time. So yeah. We can start with ashwagandha and also Brahmi.
Yes. So, you know, what was funny, Ellen, is when I first got into Ayurvedic medicine, I was so thrilled by like the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different herbs out there. And of course, I wanted to take all of them. And one thing I found from my teachers, they said this repeatedly, that when you really start to master this, you'll end up using like 5 herbs. And I couldn't believe it because there were so many different herbal compositions. And it's exactly what I found after 20 years of practicing this, was that you start to kind of figure out the basic story, right? You start to figure out the basic story of the body, and you approach that story. And we might approach that story in different ways, but you start to figure out how to unlock the keys to health. And so for me, ashwagandha and Brahmi were two of the most important herbs for unlocking the story that I saw here in the US, which is really the story that we see around the world in developed countries. And that was a story of the impact of stress, the impact of food addictions, because food is now, you know, it's made to be addictive. There's an entire science on how to make foods addictive. But that story of what was happening to our gut and our brain was basically something that required herbs like ashwagandha and Brahmi to unlock people out of that prison, to release them from that prison. So ashwagandha is very well known as an adaptogen. It's been used in Ayurveda for, you know, thousands of years and is incorporated into many different formulations. And that is because it reduces the impact of stress. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you're just putting daisies in everybody's hair and you're just, you know, looking up at the clouds. It doesn't mean that at all. You actually become more focused when you're not under so much stress. Your body starts functioning better. And so I knew that stress had gotten to a point that was one of the main reasons why people, you know, had food addictions, was just they didn't know how to cope. They didn't know how to normalize like the dopamine response in their brain anymore. And so ashwagandha was there to help to normalize stress. The other aspect of our modern story, again, you've got to look at antidotes for the story that's in front of you, not the story that was there 1,000 years ago or 1,000 years from now. So the other big thing was this whole issue about food addictions, and not just food, but, you know, so many different addictions. And why food to me is such a powerful addiction is it's a legalized addiction. Like companies are allowed to make food, you know, and I'm talking about processed junk food here, but they're allowed to make the food addictive, which to me is just astounding that we have said this is okay, because it goes in and it really manipulates the brain. And so Brahmi is an herb that I used often as a neurologist to treat a myriad of neurological conditions. But it also helps people to normalize the dopamine and the pleasure response to these foods so that they can actually break the addiction cycle. So for me, ashwagandha and Brahmi were now part of the solution to the modern day story. And, you know, as I was saying before, you have to treat the gut and the brain at the same time. If you only treat one aspect of it, it's always, the battle is only half won. So the other herb that I began to use on a regular basis is called triphala. And this is just made out of 3 fruits. One of the fruits, you know, I actually grew up eating just as a pickle on my table. But these 3 berries, when you put them together, it's a very, very potent antidote for gut issues, global gut issues. And it helps to reset the brain and the gut by creating a healthy environment for your microbiome. And so when you combine triphala, which starts to flush out the toxins, environmental toxins, as well as, you know, the toxins that we're eating through our foods, it starts to flush those out, reestablish a healthy mucosa, provides an environment where your bacteria can, you know, can grow. When you couple that with the ashwagandha and Brahmi, we now have something that can actually address our modern day challenges.
What great information. And wow, this time with you went so quickly. I really suggest that our listeners visit your website at DR and then KULREETCHAUDHARY. That's a lot to write. Don't write while you're driving, but you can go to our archives and just click the link and find out so much more about the microbiome and mood and all the fabulous work that Dr. Kulri Choudhury has been doing. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you, Ellen. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, please go to naturalnurse.com, sign up for the newsletter, or just look around at all the free resources on the site, or look at the classes to see if there's something in particular you'd like to join us, perhaps an herb walk. Go out and collect wild edible medicinal plants and go home making your own medicine. So until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.